This is Money in Motion with Klaus Financial, a fun and informative show designed to help you get answers to all your retirement questions in one place.
That's right. All of your retirement questions in one place, and that is right here. You can call us at 815-398-9765. That's 815-398-WROK. Any questions at all about your retirement, savings for college education, 401ks versus Roth IRAs. They have Roth 401ks now. Any questions at all? 815-398-9765. We will answer them live. You can also email us at radio@coolidge.com. Joining us this week in studio, Steve Scow and Kyle Kite from Cost Financial. Gentlemen, welcome back onto the show.
Good morning, Mike. What a gorgeous fall day today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know, Steve, you're a golfer, right? Kyle, are you a golfer as well or no?
I am. I actually got out this weekend.
Nice. It was a beautiful, well, there were some pockets of beautifulness. We had a little bit of rain yesterday. I was going to say it was beautiful, but it's going to be hard to beat today. We should remind our listeners, too, that we give our cost quiz question of the week at some point throughout the show, and the winner this week will win a $25 gift card for Starbucks. Let's start off with this word diversification. We hear that a lot in finance and in investing. What does diversification mean, and how does it affect my money?
You know, that's a great question, Mike. And in reality, not only do probably many people hear about diversification, they probably hear don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Yes.
That's along the same terminology. And really what we're referring to when we're talking about investment diversification is not a situation where you're looking to maybe use three or four or five different professionals or different banks to invest or accumulate your dollars. It's really looking at a consolidated strategy with your advisor, your professional, to have your dollars invested in different types of investments, such as different types of stocks, whether they be in the U.S. or overseas, or different types of bonds, whether they, again, be in the U.S. or overseas. There are many other ways to address investment risk, which is really what it boils down to when we're talking about investment diversification. If you go back to Investing 101, a lot of times where you start is another word we call asset allocation. And again, what I mean by that is how much, what percentage of your invested dollars are in stocks, what percentage are in bonds, what percentage is in cash, and possibly what percentage are in investments that are not stocks and bonds, called alternative investments. So when you take that to the next level after asset allocation, then you're looking at how, what type of stocks, how many stocks, where are they at, and the same with bonds and the same with alternative investments. So it's a matter of you start at one point, 101 for investing, and then you drill through it deeper to spread it out more. And have so your dollars that are invested aren't always going the same direction. What I mean by that is that when the markets in general are going up, everybody understandably is feeling very comfortable about being more aggressive because they're getting great investment returns. But for most people in the markets in general, over the last decade or so, the overall returns of a strategy have really been geared or tailored more based on the risk levels you've been taking. And the returns and actual performance are definitely muted from what they were years ago. So it's a matter of managing your strategy for comfort levels. Again, it's more important, in our opinion, what are your comfort levels when the markets are going down versus going up.
That's where risk tolerance comes into play, doesn't it?
Most definitely. Again, it's how comfortable are you when you're seeing those account values drop? And again, for most people, if they're still working and have their own paychecks and they're accumulating for future use, then they may be more risk-oriented because it's not impacting them immediately. As you get closer to retirement, you've heard us talk about that many times, that there is that window of importance, usually about 5 years before you retire, in the first 5 years in retirement, where if you become too aggressively invested, you may significantly affect your ability to draw an amount of income out over the rest of your life.
We are speaking with Steve and Kyle from Kloss Financial. You, listening to this right now, can call us at 815-398-9765. That's 815-398-WROK for any questions at all about your retirement. One term I know we hear a lot is Roth IRAs, and now they have something in the last couple of years. They came out with Roth 401ks. Should I be saving into something like this in my company's retirement plan? And if so, why?
Yeah, that's a good question, Mike. You're exactly right. Roth IRAs have been around for a while, so people are a lot more familiar with them. But over the last few years here, we've had Roth 401ks being offered inside company plans, and they're a great tool, both the Roth IRA and the Roth 401k, for younger people especially, to put money away. Because the big difference between a traditional 401k that we're all used to and a Roth 401k is what type of money it's put in with, and then how that money grows and how it is taxed at a later date. Because obviously anything in an IRA or a 401k is there for retirement. So we need to know what's going to happen to this in the future when I go to use it. So the big difference, again, is the Roth IRA is funded with after-tax dollars. So essentially you're paying income tax on the money now and you're putting it away, but you're letting it grow tax-free. Whereas a traditional 401k is you get the pre-tax contribution, so you get the tax deduction today, but it's growing tax deferred. And so there's a big difference between tax free and tax deferred, and that a traditional 401k, when you go to pull money out in the future, you are going to have to pay income tax on this. But because the Roth is funded with after tax dollars, it's growing tax free for all these years, and then when you go to pull it out in the future, there's also no taxes due. So your compounding interest is just huge when you don't have to worry about taxing it in the future. And another big thing about the Roth versus a traditional is that Roth IRAs aren't required to pull out required minimum distributions, which you've heard us talk about. Again, at age 70 and a half, anything in an IRA, a traditional IRA, a traditional 401k, the IRS forces you to start pulling money out. Well, some people don't need to pull that extra money out because they've got enough pensions and everything else. So if this money was in a Roth, they don't have to worry about pulling out those required minimum distributions, which is huge as well.
And then the Roth 401ks, there are benefits and drawbacks to Roth IRAs and 401ks. And you mentioned them already, the tax deferment differences. But is there a big difference between those two terms that we should be aware of, a Roth 401k versus a Roth IRA?
They actually work very similarly now. They're basically the same thing. Anything that's in a 401k when you go to retire will be rolled into an IRA in most situations. So if you have a Roth option inside the 401k, you could contribute to that, or you could contribute to your Roth IRA outside of it. The nice thing with the 401ks, like we've talked about in the past, is the contribution limits are a lot higher. So if you're contributing to a Roth IRA and you're under age 50, you can only put $5,500 a year in it. But in a Roth 401k, you can put up to $18,000 a year away in it. So that can really, make your nest egg grow that much more. And then as far as the drawbacks with the Roths, obviously, like I said, the biggest one is that you're getting taxed on the dollars today. So if you're in a high income tax bracket, you may not want to do the Roth because you need that income tax deduction today, hoping that in retirement you'll be in a lower tax bracket. So that's really the major drawback to them, is just paying the taxes on the funds today if you're in a high tax bracket.
Yeah, there's one other thing there too, Mike, with regard to the 401ks that we've talked about more than once. And many times people will ask, well, should I be contributing to the Roth IRA or the Roth 401k? And many times we've looked at it, and it's really been almost an age starting point. If you're under the age of 45, more times than not, and you're not yet in a high tax bracket, as Kyle's pointed out, that accumulation in either the Roth IRA or the Roth 401k can make a lot of sense right out of the gates. If you're 45 and older, it may or may not, depending on what your timeline is to retirement, what your income bracket is, as he pointed out, and also what your goals and objectives are. So there are different money buckets, so to speak, for your retirement. And your income tax impact, as Kyle just mentioned, is one of those factors.
You, listening to this right now, can chime in and ask questions to Steve and Kyle. 815-398-9765, 815-398-WROK, about Roth 401Ks, about Roth IRAs, and maybe about your child's college education and saving for that. We're going to get into that after this on Kos Financial's Money in Motion, answers to all your retirement questions in one place, and also we'll ask the Kos Quiz question of the week. Don't go anywhere.
This is Money in Motion with Kos Financial, a fun and informative show designed to help you get answers to all your retirement questions in one place.
815-398-9765, 815-398-WROK, your questions to Steve and Kyle from Kos Financial about 401Ks, diversification, Roth IRAs, and perhaps college education and paying for that. I know that's a challenge that every family has if they have children who plan on going to college. How should I save for my child's college education, gentlemen?
Yeah, that's a great point. What we've seen recently with people, you know, kids going back to school, it's starting to hit the parents a little bit that, holy cow, they're going to be in college sooner than we were anticipating. So it's all starting to hit the fan now. So there's a few different types of accounts that you can use to save for either college, or there are certain accounts that will allow you to save for private education. The biggest one nowadays is the Illinois, or you know, just a 529 plan. They're each state specific, so I'll talk specifically about the Illinois plan. It's called the Bright Start plan. You can go online. They're very simple now to just set one up. The reason why we like people to start these is because, as we know, college is getting more and more expensive every single year, and especially if you have multiple children, you can build up a big bill really quick. So the sooner you start saving for these, the better. By putting it in like a 529 plan, you're allowing to grow, again, that tax-free in this situation if they're used for the proper expenses. So if you start saving, you know, any money, if it's $50 a month or $25 a month, that's all growing tax-free as long as it's used for qualified education expenses, which is pretty much mostly what you can think of when it comes to college books and computers and all that kind of stuff. Those all qualify for those expenses. There is another plan that was more common in the past called the Coverdell Education Savings Account. Those you don't see as much anymore just because the 529 has a lot more flexibility and also the contribution levels. So the Coverdell, you can only put about $2,000 a year away towards that. And as you know, if college is going to cost $100,000, it takes a long time at $2,000 a year to get there. So that's why most people nowadays use the Illinois, they're the 529 plans. They're a lot more flexible. The contribution limits are a lot higher. So that's the big one. And like I said, they're very easy to set up. And this goes into the asset allocation and the diversification. You're allowed to pick out certain mutual funds and exchange-traded funds within these accounts to kind of get your growth. And you can adjust these just like you do your IRA as your children are getting closer to school. And we can't take as much risk because we're going to be needing the money pretty soon. So they're very powerful.
The most common one, like you said, is the 529 now, not the cover of the Illinois 529.
Yeah, exactly. For the state of Illinois, it's a 529 plan. Another big benefit of these that we didn't really touch on yet is in the state of Illinois, you can actually get a state income tax deduction for anything that you put into the 529 plans, which is huge. So when you do your taxes at the end of the year, if you've put money into a 529, you can get a deduction for that amount. So
nice. All right. So anything else about college education, diversification in 401k before I ask you about debt and managing it?
Just one last thing that's kind of cool on the 529 plans that Kyle's talking about is virtually you could have anybody add to that and contribute to the plan, so whether it be the parents or many times it's the grandparents that kick in to help. So that's another plus on those 529 plans.
Ah, yeah. So it's not just the parents. Grandparents can contribute to that same fund as well.
Yes.
Yes, and Kos Financial will help you how to do that, on how to do that, listeners. KosFinancial.com is the website, KLAAS Financial.com. And you can go there at any time. These segments, all the way, by the way, we should say, are sponsored by Kos Financial. All right, so debt and managing it. Managing debt. Most people have debt, even as they're trying to save for the colleges, or for their children's college education, and perhaps their own retirement. Most people have debt. So, are there any rules to managing debt? and keeping my interest rates low and my credit good while I continue to have debt?
That's another great question, Mike. And in reality, when you take a look at that, there is some debt that could be considered a little bit better possibly than other. For example, if you have a low interest rate, fixed rate on your home mortgage, that would not necessarily be a negative debt, although you hear us very often talking about trying to minimize and eliminate as much debt as possible before you actually retire, because then it takes less income to be able to maintain your lifestyle. When we're talking about high interest debt, many times that would be the plastic credit cards that are, you know, too easy over quite a few years here to accumulate, especially if it's a situation where you have some, your spouse has some, and there's not a coordinated effort. You might find out that you end up with a lot more debt faster than you would have ever realized. And if all you do is pay minimum payments on those credit card debts, it almost can end up being a 30-year mortgage. So wow, it's something that you really have to take into consideration. When you look at purchasing vehicles today, again, you'll always hear us talk about, obviously, vehicles for the most part only go one way in value, and that's down after you fire it up, even on the showroom. So when you look at those types of debts for vehicles, fortunately, the interest rates have been extremely low for several years, and you may have had a very low interest rate car loan or a zero interest rate car loan based on manufacturers over the last several years. So that won't necessarily be a bad debt, but it's things that you need to take into consideration and control so that you, again, don't have it be a situation where your outgo exceeds your income. Because when that happens, then your upkeep will be your downfall.
When your outgo exceeds your income, when you say outgo, you mean...
When you're spending more than you're making.
Spending more than you're making, yes. Okay. Yeah, managing debt, I know, is always... something that people struggle with, and it is smart, by the way, correct me if I'm wrong, to pay high interest debt first, right? If you've got these credit card payments, or let's say you have to decide between paying a little bit extra on your mortgage or paying a, you know, 10% credit card you have and versus a 7% car loan you have. It's smart to start with that high interest debt first, paying it off, right?
Absolutely correct, Mike. In fact, with many of the credit cards, you may see 15 to 20% interest rates.
Mm. Yeah, and if you pay the minimum on those people, I mean, that you could just be paying them off forever. And then, of course, if you keep charging on it, it keeps getting higher and higher. And this is how people get into problems with debt. So managing debt is extremely important. And we still live in a relatively low interest rate environment as far as mortgages and whatnot goes, and that low interest rates, you know, with the Fed, that affects loan rates for banks and car loans, etc. too. But that's where your credit comes in, and your credit rating comes in, I know.
Yes.
If any of our listeners have any questions at all, 815-398-9765 is a phone number, 815-398-WROK. We talked before about 401k statements that we receive from our employers. How often should I review my 401k statement and talk with my financial advisor? Is that an annual thing, or is that something every quarter you should do? What's the best time frame for that?
Yeah, this is definitely a personal decision. Some people like to look at it on a daily basis. We try to push you away from that because, as you know, the market lately has been up 100 points one day and down 100 points one day. So if you're talking a large 401k balance, that can be a lot of money going on in one day, going one way or the other. So they're just paper losses until you go to do something with them. So definitely you should review them on a regular basis, at least probably quarterly. Younger people, maybe once a year just to see where you're at. But you should always, you know, talk to your financial advisor and just make sure your allocation's proper. That would be at least on an annual basis as we, you know, move through life progressions and things like that, because also on your statement it will talk about your contribution percentages and all that kind of stuff. So discussing that stuff with your financial professional is huge to make the proper adjustments to those types of things. So
yes, and if you're not getting those statements, maybe talk to your human resources person at your work, or the bank that is managing, or the whatever it is that's managing that 401k. You should be getting them regularly and perusing them. And if you don't know what a lot of the acronyms are and used, you know, that's relatively easy to look up. But that is something that you, and you guys mentioned acronyms sometimes on the show, and we assume a lot of people would know what they mean. But there are a bunch of different financial planning acronyms that are used, like CFP, CFA, those sort of things, right?
Very true. In our business, as you mentioned, Mike, CFP is for a certified financial planner. CFA is for a chartered financial consultant. And there are various other acronyms. You may, you know, many people maybe have heard the one for, obviously, in accounting, is CPA, for certified public accountants. So it's just a matter of you know, that's an educational level, experience level for individuals in their respective professions to be able to expand their level of expertise and the degree to which they will be able to help those clients and individuals covering more than just one area such as investing. And that kind of gets back to where we've talked about many times about being a coach and a quarterback. As a coach, we're helping you to create and design your plan and monitoring it. And then from the standpoint of being that quarterback, we're actually helping you to implement the plan, be it the investing, coordinating with your other financial professionals, whether it be an attorney, an accountant, insurance person, to really, again, have that coordinated game plan and effort for not only accumulation towards retirement, but also then managing your estate and distributing your income throughout your retirement years so that you're able to enjoy all the hard efforts and accumulation you've done over the years.
Yeah, that's what's so key about why a group like Kloss Financial is so valuable, is because it's not, just like Steve said, advice that they give and the coaching, but it's actual quarterbacking on the field, executing a lot of these ideas about managing your retirement and managing your financial portfolio and decisions, really important ones, like managing debt and whatnot. We definitely covered a lot on today's show. I do have time to ask the Kloss Quiz question of the week, and it is, what is the most common account type for parents to save for their children's college expenses? Again, what is the most common account type for parents to save for their children's college expenses? We mentioned that earlier. 815-877-8440 is the number to call. First person to call wins a $25 gift card or Starbucks. 877-8440 is the number to call. That is Kloss Financial. Gentlemen, anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
Have an awesome week, Mike.
Yep, have a good one, Mike.
Until next time, we will see you at Coolidge.com. That's spelled with a K. No matter what you do, keep that radio on.